Mind and Fitness Podcast. It is Wednesday, October the 16th. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, the podcast is brought to you by the patrons of the show. So shout out to Christina, Holly, Ross, Caroline, Julie, Casey, Alyssa, Brian, Sarah, Adrian, Stan, Kristen, Sarah, Helen, Arnie, Kim, and Barb. Big, big shout out. So these people have decided to contribute monthly to Patreon, which basically is it's monetary or financial support for the podcast. Podcast takes some time to put together, obviously. Booking guests, having the interviews, certainly doing the editing. But then also the hard costs, like being able to pay for the equipment, the microphones, the Zoom recorder, the charging unit, the AC adapter, the Skype account, the hosting fees, all that kind of stuff. So it's really just kind of a few bucks in the tip jar. So if you go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast, you can contribute and it would be greatly appreciated. And you'll get a shout out at the beginning of every episode. So you know, you got to love that. So we have a kick-ass interview. It's actually kind of funny because when I was sort of mapping out shows for October, a thought came to me last week that I've been asked a lot recently about somatic tracking, somatic work. What do I do? What can people do? Why is this thing so popular? How can it help me? Kind of all the things that relate around that. And so that was the plan, that I was going to do a solo show on that. And I have a bunch of interviews that I've scheduled to do in the month of October, and sometimes the people, where they came from, how they found me, how I found them, kind of gets lost in the shuffle. So usually a couple hours before I do the interview, I go back in Facebook Messenger or an email or wherever it was that we were conversing, just to remind myself of what it was that we're going to be talking about. And someone had emailed me not long ago asking about somatic work and if I'd be interested in having somebody who is learning about somatic work and does somatic work within the yoga field. And so I thought, yeah, no, that'd be awesome. So that is who's joining me today. Another Wisconsin person, and probably the coolest name of anybody that's been on the podcast, Christy Keekin. So that's what today's interview is going to be about. I'm going to keep this introduction super short, and that's kind of all that I got for you. I think you're gonna like this interview. There's also going to be information on where to find her and things like that in the show notes, as well as us going over it towards the end of the podcast. So as always, I love hearing from you guys. If you have some feedback or questions or anything like that, feel free to DM me, email me, really any way that you can touch base, and I'd love to hear from you. So here is Christy Keekin. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. And with me today, calling from the Central Time Zone, I'm out here in Pacific Northwest in Seattle, but Christy Keekin is on the line from Madison, Wisconsin. Christy, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Eddie.
Thanks for joining me. So Christy's got mindbodemotion.com, and I told her, good on you for getting that URL, and I can't believe it wasn't claimed. So I got in touch with Christy. I think she had come across some of the stuff that I do for the podcast, and started bringing to light the thing that she specializes in, which is crazy ironic, because the plan for this week's episode was I was going to do a solo show on somatic work. And then right before Christy and I rolled, I went back to do some research on her knowledge base, and it's all on somatics. So I think that's gonna be a lot of what we're talking about today. But I got very little background on you and kind of even why you got into doing this in particular. So give us the rundown. What goes on? You know, what's up with you? Why did you pick this? And I'm sure that there's a TMS story in there somehow that led you to this. And that seems like it's kind of the norm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, just thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be on your podcast. I just started listening actually, a month or two ago. So kind of trying to work through some of the archives, and keeping up with, you know, who you've been talking with. But, so yeah, there is definitely a TMS story, and, I'm, you know, happy to talk about that. It's pretty kind of standard, you know, pain. It was chronic pain diagnosed as quote fibromyalgia, did the whole like medical system. It was like, okay, well, you have to live with this pain, and, that was not okay for me. So there's the TMS part, but really how I came to doing like somatic work and really focusing on the body and the nervous system was actually through yoga. So I'm a certified yoga teacher, and I've also worked in the human service field for quite some time now, close to 10 years. So that's looked like different things, case management, social work. So right now what I'm doing is I work for a county program called Dane County CCS, which is Comprehensive Community Services. And so we provide community-based mental health and substance use services to the Medicaid population. So a lot of my clients have a dual diagnosis, which is mental health and substance use. And then just the population as a whole has a lot of trauma, complex trauma, just like some of the craziest stories and things that you could ever imagine. And so I had gotten my yoga teacher training. I'd gone into that at the same time that I was doing that training. I was actually working with victims of human trafficking and prostitution. And that was sort of like my first, that was where I first heard the word trauma and really didn't, it was interesting because I'd been in the field for a while and like a lot of my clients had been diagnosed with PTSD, but like I had no training on it and I didn't really understand it and just kind of thought of it as more of like, oh, that's like veterans get PTSD and I don't work with veterans, so it's not important for me to know. But when I started working with victims of human trafficking, I realized that trauma was like the central piece to what was going on with the victims, and that I really needed to learn more about how to work with people with trauma. So at the same time, when I was going through the yoga teacher training, one of the modules I did was on modality called TRE, which is trauma releasing exercises.
One second before we jump into the TRE stuff, because I think maybe one thing that's important to clarify, because there's been a couple of people, maybe a few people on the podcast that talk about trauma, and one of the pushbacks I get a lot of times if I put somebody in the podcast that even mentions the word trauma, that the thought immediately goes to it had to have been something veteran related, like you had mentioned, or has to be somebody who was a kid and like witnessed their mom kill their dad or their dad kill their mom. Like it, I've said several times in this that to me, and this is something that I've learned over the last few years, is that trauma is so each to their own. What's traumatic to one person is not at all to another. So can you just give like a 30-second to 1-minute synopsis on how to even define trauma?
Yeah, and I thank you, Eddie, for cutting in, because that is so important. And I think like because I'm kind of seeped in this world now, it's like, oh yeah, you know, everybody knows what I'm talking about. But so one of the things that I think that I've not heard in the TMS world especially, but like just in general, is that there's an idea that trauma is defined by the event, but trauma is actually defined by the nervous system. So it's a nervous system response. So it doesn't really matter what the event is. Now, because we need a way that's easy to talk about things, we like, it's like, oh, you know, trauma. Yeah. You know, like war, violence, like abuse. So there's a way in which our language helps us understand something that's kind of esoteric, but really what it is like trauma is a state, is a nervous system state. So it's a physiological response to a stressor that is seen by the nervous system as the nervous system decides we don't have the resources to cope with this thing. And so basically, like, we have to switch on all these different physiological things in the body to try and survive what is happening.
And this is the adrenaline, the cortisol, the altered blood flow to certain parts of the body. Yeah. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Increased heart rate, decreased digestion, decreased sex drive. It's like basically all non-essential physiological function goes to the wayside, because like if a bear were to walk in the room right now, like it doesn't matter if I'm planning, you know, I'm not going to sit here and plan my 401k if a bear walks in the room. It's like, I got to survive this thing. So that's, and the other thing that I would mention that's really so important to understand is that trauma responses are not decided. Our logical brain, and we can talk about the triune brain theory. I'm not sure if you or your listeners are familiar, but basically we have this front part of our brain, which is the newest part of our brain to evolve. It's kind of the human brain, the prefrontal cortex. It's the part that's like the logic, the reason, right? And so something can happen where it's like, yeah, that really shouldn't bother me. And that's like this part of the brain up here that's on the prefrontal cortex. However, the lizard brain and the mammalian brain can be like, this is not okay. And so it's really important to understand that there are things that we can do to change that relationship. And like, we can work on perceiving things differently. And like, we can work on releasing trauma from our body. But at the end of the day, our survival response is decided by the nervous system. It's completely out of our conscious awareness. And these things happen like that.
That's what I was thinking. I had a therapist once who said that he called it the alligator, but he was talking about the reptilian part of the brain, but he said that your body has already done the things that it's already engaged to the things that it's going to do to react to whatever event it is that you're reacting to. It's already started that flow before the prefrontal cortex has even been able to figure out what even happened just now. And one of the better examples, and it's not better is not a great word for this, but when I worked at a grocery store as a teenager, there was a guy who he ran the self-checkout. So if you can imagine, like, the guy who kind of stands at the podium, and he was in the first Gulf War. And I remember once there was a pallet that had dropped in the back room, maybe 75 yards away, but it was from, 30 feet in the air. So that's a loud pallet of whatever it was that was on it. But it hit the ground, it smashed down on the ground. Literally, that guy was on the ground before I even heard it. It happened so fast. And that's one of the things that made me think of is, and one thing I've said a lot on the podcast before is I talk about those two parts of the brain interacting. Am I on video right now, by the way? Can you see my hand doing it? Okay, so.
Yeah, I know, same thing. I'm like, here.
Is that I say, like, this particular event happens, whatever it is, your boss yells at you, you get run over by a car, like, the event kind of doesn't matter. But I'm like, really what we're trying to do in a lot of ways with talk therapies and different things like that is like being able to sort of take your hand and grab the lizard brain and bring it up to the front. And then like a laundry chute suction, like right into the prefrontal cortex, but the world doesn't work that way. I mean, in some ways. So I guess continue with that, with the talk on that.
Yeah, that's a really good example, Eddie. So what you're talking about with like, okay, so we kind of got to get like the quote lizard brain, which is the lower brain. It's like in the back, like if you just put your hand like right on the back of your head, like kind of where your neck and your head meet, that's where your lizard brain is. And then like the kind of mammal brain, like the emotional center, is more like if you kind of drilled like straight into your brain. And then we have the prefrontal cortex, which is like kind of on the top in your forehead. And so, So this is something I just actually learned like last week, that I knew that the lizard brain, so the lower brain part, was so from an energy standpoint, it's energy cheap. So it takes way less energy than our prefrontal cortex, which is energy. It costs us a lot of energy to use this part of our brain, the prefrontal cortex, the human brain. It is also fast. So the lower brain, the lizard brain, is fast, fast, fast. And the human part of the brain, the human brain, the prefrontal cortex, logic brain, is slow. And so I knew that. But what I learned last week was that there are connections between the prefrontal cortex and the lizard brain, but there are way more connections from the lizard brain and the emotional brain to the prefrontal cortex than the other way around. And I'm not exactly, I need to study it more and research it more. I'm not exactly sure like how can you have a connection that only goes one way, but I guess it makes sense, right? We have tons of connections in our bodies that like generally go one way. And so that's why when you're working, I think, with the nervous system, with any type of stress response, because trauma is really just kind of an extreme stress response. So we can even just use the word stress here, which I think is some easier for some people to grasp onto because everybody has stress. But when you're working with a stress response, you have to involve the lower parts of the brain, which are connected to the body and the nervous system. You can't just like change your thoughts or perceive it differently. I mean, that's going to help, but like, it's just because it's so much slower. Like you were saying, like these things happen so quickly in the lizard brain and the nervous system and the body, the reactions are so fast and they happen out of our conscious awareness that we can't use the prefrontal cortex to like step in and make the lower parts of the brain stop working. It's like we have to go into the lower brain function if we're going to heal. And that also will involve like some logic, right? And like some kind of the prefrontal cortex is the part of the brain that's like, oh, hey, nervous system function, like, no, it's actually okay, right? So it can kind of mitigate some of that stress. But at the end of the day, the prefrontal cortex is never going to be faster than the lizard brain. Like it just is the way, I don't know, maybe it will evolve. I'm not sure. But like, that's where we are right now. So
do you mean to tell me that I can't just post a happy thoughts meme on Facebook and hashtag positive vibes only and and my reptilian part of the brain will chill the fuck out? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, basically. I'm sorry.
I did an entire show on toxic positivity not that long
ago.
Yeah,
I listened to it. I love it.
And yeah. The other thing that I was thinking about this earlier, and sort of related, unrelated, but I've talked a little bit about somatic tracking for anxiety regulation. And I was trying to explain an audio. That's one thing. Like, even though you and I are on video as we record this, this will not be on video. So to try and explain some of this stuff as we're making motions around our head. I know. Is difficult. So when I was explaining sort of what I do or what I would recommend to do, which was really stolen from Alan Gordon, but I was saying, you know, I'm a superhero guy. And so like Iron Man is my guy. And I was saying, imagine where he has that arc, that sets that arc reactor in his sternum. And that's kind of where you want to think about where a lot of like people's anxiety is hidden right there in the sternum. But it made me think of a clip in Iron Man where he had just got in this brutal fight. This is in the very first one. And he only had like 16% power. And the guy who lives in his mask, I can't remember his name, Jarvis or something, had told him he really needs to consider what he wants to put on reserve and what he wants to have be his primary, because you only have 14% power. So, yeah. You know, be cognizant of what it is that you're going to use as you go into the final fight or whatever it was. So it's just another superhero reference, but that's what geeks do. So
no, but I love that, because we have to, I feel like we have to be able to like put these kind of scientific concepts into like metaphor or analogy that we understand, you know, and that, so that's because that's exactly what happens is like, it's like, hey, we only have so much energy in our nervous system to fight this thing off. So like, you know, we don't care about planning or like positive or like appraisal or like whatever. It's just like, get me the F out of here. Yeah, like make sure I am surviving.
And so that was kind of like a hard left turn we did a few minutes ago. You were in the midst of talking about how you got into TRE, trauma release. What's the E?
Yeah. Exercises. Yeah.
And you got into that through yoga. So talk about that. Cause that's like a good friend of mine. She was actually my favorite teacher in high school, owns three yoga studios around here. She's the woman who goes out to India and does training for 3 weeks and all this kind of stuff. I've never heard her talk about it. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So, I entered into yoga most like a lot of other people from like a physical standpoint. It was like, I had knee pain, which looking back, I'm like, oh, it was TMS. right. We all do that.
You can armchair quarterback everything now.
Yeah. So, I got into it for physical, but I had a lot of emotional kind of mental health, and now I'm realizing like, oh, this, like I had trauma, right? But I was like a lot of other people where it's like, no, I had a good childhood. Like, yeah, there were some things, but so for me, just really understanding the physiology of trauma has helped me realize like, oh, I did have trauma, but I didn't like appraise it as such at the time. But anyway, so I went into it for the physical, and then I ended up, because right before I started my yoga training, I had another bout of TMS, which lasted like 3 years, and like I'm just kind of on the other side of it now. But I couldn't do as much physical stuff in yoga because I had this back pain. And so I just really had to come at it from a little bit of a different perspective. And so just was really more interested in kind of the emotional kind of impacts of it. And so then when we had the TRE provider that came in, and the name of the module, they called it emotional release. And I was just like, oh, like so excited, like, yeah, this is great. Cause I had a sense that I was like, yeah, I know I need to like, I know there's like stuff stored in the body. We could talk about the science of how does stuff get stored in the body too. But I knew there was stuff in there, but I just wasn't really sure like how to get it out of there. And so, yeah, so when I first started, practicing TRE, which is actually really cool that it's a self-help tool. So once you know it, your body remembers that it can shake. So basically what TRE is that it helps bring our body into a state where it can naturally release stress and tension through a shaking mechanism. So I started practicing on my own. And so like the benefits that I had felt emotionally from yoga, that took me like 5 years to get, you know, the amount of benefit. It was like for me with a few TRE sessions, I had like the same amount of benefit. So it was basically like, wow, this is like yoga, but it's like a million times more potent, if that makes sense. So I was having like way better sleep. Like I was having like terrible panic attacks and anxiety and like pain and stuff. And it just really, within a few sessions, like just really calmed things down for me. So that's why I decided to train in it.
What, talk about the physiological mechanism on what is going on. Cause sometimes like I'm so much better about this now than I would have been 3 years ago. But like if life just, I always say like, not always say, but in the house, if I need like a break, or I just need, you know, I got to go journal, or I got to do whatever, I just tell my wife, I just say, life's feeling heavy. That's all I say. Cause that's really that's the best way that I can describe it. So talk about physiologically what's going on, and maybe, you know, leverage a story. It can be your own, could be made up, but something that happens, and let's have it not be a car accident or a gunshot, you know, something like that. Right. Like let's have it be something that most of us probably have gone through, or something that's typical. Yeah. And then what is going on?
Yeah. So would it be okay if we just use your example?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I think everybody, right. It's mm-hmm. like, I don't have kids, but like I have that moment where I'm like, oh, like everybody get away from me. So, so let's talk about that. So what is happening in our body when we have a stress response is that there are physiological markers that change. And so remembering that all these physiological markers happen within the autonomic nervous system, which is the automatic. So it's like things like when we have a stress response, our heart rate will increase, right? So even like right now, I'm talking to like you, you're a new person, I'm like on a podcast, I'm having a stress response. My heartbeat is like jacked up, even though I know I'm okay. I know like you're not gonna hurt me. I could just close the computer if I need to. And yet there's still this increased heart rate that I'm not doing this. I'm not like, hey, let me make my heart beat faster. It's like, no, it's just happening. Yep. So heart rate increases, blood pressure will increase. Things can happen with our body temperature. So we might feel especially hot or especially cold, right? We might sweat more. Our digestion can actually be affected. Our cognitive function can be affected. So that's what we were talking about earlier, where when the body gets into a state of stress, it shuts down all non-essential functions. So again, that prefrontal cortex, which Eddie and I are like tapping our foreheads when we talk about that, that's not essential, right? I don't need to be able to plan for the future if there's an immediate threat in the environment. So that's why a lot of times too, when we start to get stressed out, it's like, we can't think, right? It's like, I can't, my attention, like I can't, you know, like earlier today, when as I was like you know, thing about the podcast. It's like, you know, it's like I'm trying to get out the door and like do these things and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm scattered. So it's kind of this like brain fog that can happen. And our like our sex drive kind of goes down because that's not important either. I'm not going to try to be reproducing if there's a bear in the room. Yeah. So those are the things that are happening in our body. So it's actually a physiological different. It's a different state than when we are in a more calm and grounded nervous system state.
So how do you know what are some typical mechanisms other than TRE, other than yoga? What are some things that a lot of like I think about people that will come home from work and they'll have a couple glasses of wine, right? So then they're chilling. Like, how do a lot of people tend, especially in the United States, what sort of things do regular people tend to do that seems to kind of take that edge off? Because we're not all walking. I mean, we all, pretty much everybody has something, right? This person's skin issue, is this person's stomach issue, is this person's ankle. But, you know, there's some people that are far more, I feel, debilitated with TMS stuff than there are others. And so what's going on there? How are some people seem to be more adversely impacted versus others or not?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And that's like something I've been toying with myself and wondering. And I would love to like meet the person who could tell me like that answer and have like the exact right answer to that, because that would help. That would answer a lot of like, that would just help me so much to know that. But I'll tell you what my sense is, Eddie, from understanding the nervous system. So our nervous systems get wired in a certain way. And so, and like a lot of that has to do with our previous experience. And so I know a lot of people like don't, you know, they hate to be like talking about childhood and all those kinds of things, but it really is to me that like, it depends on your life experience. And so it's also, I think it's both like kind of genetic, right? So there's a genetics aspect. It's like some people come into the world and for whatever reason, like their nervous system is just more charged, right? It's like, they just are more sensitive. They're more, kind of tend to be more like on the anxious side of the spectrum. And part of that is genetics. However, another huge, if not bigger part of that is our nurture. So it's like the nature versus nurture, and really it's both. So I'll take myself for an example. So like I was a super highly functioning person, you know, like I had some trauma in my background, but nothing like super crazy. And I have always been a highly kind of more sensitive, like highly charged nervous system. And so I think that for me, the reason why I got hit, like TMS hit me like a truck, like I was debilitated. I couldn't like, it was really, really bad for me. I think that it had to do with the fact of just like the way that my nervous system got wired from my life experience.
I think you're totally spot on. One thing that I've thought about is that basically like you're like Sarno's coined reservoir of rage kind of is mm-hmm. how big that reservoir is probably more or less going to be determined by probably a genetic predisposition, and then add in whatever your home life was like before, say, the age of 5, 7, I feel like maybe even 10 in some ways. Yeah. And so maybe you start your adulthood and you're like, you know, you graduated from college and now you're going to go into the real world, or you're going to get married, or you're going to have kids or whatever. And you're already like 75 or 80% full before you even have an opportunity to throw like daily life stuff in there. And that stuff can accumulate so quickly, I feel like sometimes, especially if I think a lot of this stuff really also has to do with us just not really knowing ourselves, what our limitations as people, not just that, hey, I can stand to work 8 hours for a day and work out for an hour and hang out with my kids for a couple hours before I just fucking lose it. I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about people.
Right, of course.
but also just that, hey, like, you know, this type, even it could just be, hey, this type of conversation with people will really set, like, we don't even necessarily know. I think like, just like the autonomic nervous system is the automatic part. I don't know why they just didn't call it that, to be honest, but
I know that's so confusing
because it's so close, but it's not quite there. But I mean, more or less, yeah, just really understanding ourselves. And so much of that is like conditioning, like babies as an example, like they're not conditioned at all. My 2-year-old Audrey, like she's giving you all the emotions all the time. You know, if she's mad, you know it. If she's sad, you know it. If she's happy, you know it. There is no conditioning there. And I gotta be honest, I'm a little envious of her, right? Because maybe if that was me, I never would have been hit with back pain or neck pain or IBS or any of that stuff. So, you know, there's that, like, there's going to come a point in time, unfortunately, I can be the best dad in the world and my wife can be the best mom in the world, but there's going to be a point where her conditioned world is going to ultimately censor how it is she feels like she can talk and act.
Yeah. And that's such, oh my gosh, that's so great. So I was with, a friend of my mom's on Sunday night and her friend, and I was doing a TRE session with them. And so I was like, explaining the nervous, just what we're talking about right now, like survival response and energy in the system and things like that. And we were talking a little bit about parenting. Yeah, I'm not a parent, and I know like probably a lot of parents like hate to hear somebody who's not a parent talk about parenting. However, we do know. So to your point, it's like, I think that there can be, parents can feel a lot of blame, like, oh, I like screwed up my kid, or like I didn't, you know, do it right. But like, once you understand the physiology of the nervous system, you realize that like, it's inevitable. Like, and because our nervous system has not caught up to where we are in our sort of modern life, like our nervous system is sort of back in the caves, yeah, in the cave days. Like it's just not wired for the world. Or to say it another way, like our world has not kept in mind like what we as what our nervous system can actually handle. So there's like no way that you're like a parent is going, because babies need an external nervous system. Like they're born into the world and they don't have all the regulatory connections that we have as adults. So they actually need an outside nervous system to regulate their nervous system. So even if you have like one off day as a parent and you have it like a little baby, like that's gonna unfortunately kind of mess with that baby's nervous system. But like, you know, so it is really tough. It's hard to talk about this stuff, right? It's like, this is kind of the stuff that is, we can go really quickly into like shame and blame and like, you like screwed me up, and believe me, I have a lot of that toward my parents. But it's, I think, really helpful to stay, if we can, in a space of like, this is science, this is nature. It's like, do we get mad at the sun for rising and setting? Like, no, it's like, that's just what it does. Yep. Like, do we get mad at a dog for barking? No, that's what it does. Like, this is just kind of the nature of it.
Yeah, certainly. So you get into the TRE stuff, and now you're training into somatic experiencing. I asked off air, and I don't want to hear you. I want to hear you talk about it. And I even said, don't drop any knowledge bombs until we start rolling. Because I brought up somatic tracking earlier, which Alan Gordon has talked a lot about. And I was just talking to she just moved to Connecticut, so I don't think she holds this position anymore. But Christy Wiebe from the Pain Psychology Center, because I was having a really rough time the last couple of weeks with like, it's like my pain was just amping up for some reason, like, you know, whatever it was. And I had told her, like, I want to do a little bit more. Because she's always been a bit, she had this terrible wrist pain, terrible knee issues, like, you know, like you and like me, got into doing this kind of stuff, probably in a lot of ways because they battled so many issues for so long and couldn't figure out what is that key to open this lock and have this thing be behind me and learn more and that kind of thing. In her opinion, somatic tracking is the most powerful thing that somebody can do for themselves. And so talk about that. What is somatic tracking, somatic experiencing, to just, you know, somebody that doesn't go to a specialist, somebody that does it themselves. Yeah. That was the thing that she had recommended to me. And it's something that I've upped my somatic work extensively. When I say upped it, I mean like, we're talking 4 total minutes, maybe per day.
Yeah.
But it's made such a drastic change that I know that there's got to be something to that. So talk about what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So So somatic experiencing. So I just started the training. So I've had two modules out of like, I don't know, 15. So it's a 3-year training. So I'm like, you know, 4 months in. So recognizing the limitation of my knowledge. But however, from like TRE and like working kind of with a lot of folks with stress, trauma, whatever you want to call it, I have, I think, a pretty good basis of understanding of like, why are we doing this? And so somatic experiencing, there's a lot of different ways to talk about it. One of the ways that they talk about it is that basically somatic experiencing is a way of mapping your nervous system. So it's figuring out like where there might be excess survival energy like stored in your nervous system, and then working with it to help metabolize. And I really like the word metabolize versus the word release, because I feel like when we say release, it's like, it's like, oh, this thing is bad and I need to release it. Like I need to get rid of it. And so I think of it more as metabolizing, right? It's like when we eat our food, if we don't metabolize it, it will just like sit in our stomach and rot.
Well, that's one distinction that I want you to make, is that you had said mapping your nervous system. Are you talking about like a physical location, like my ankle hurts, so that's where this, that's what you mean?
No, sorry. Yeah. I mean, it could be, right? So it could be that sometimes, like if we're having a pain or like a particular sensation in like a particular spot of the body, it could be that there's like some kind of stored energy there. But, when you start to work with it, you may find that like, oh, well, this thing in my like shoulder is actually a distraction from feeling this emotion in my belly, right? So it's, yeah, I realize the word mapping is probably not super helpful to people, but it really is. So the idea is that so excess survival energy, when we have stress response and it's not metabolized, it gets stuck in the body because it has to go. It doesn't just dissolve. It's not like, oh, I get really stressed and then it like all of a sudden just like I just breathe it out. It stays in there. So it stays in the tissues, it stays in like in our physiology, in our organs. So it could be that we're like, oh, okay, I'm like I found this extra tension in my knee, but it could be like, oh, I'm feeling this thing in my knee, and like now I'm tracking it now, and I'm like bringing this quality of attention to it, and like all of a sudden it's moving and it's like going over here and it's doing this other thing.
So that's an interesting, and it's the stuff that I've been doing. So sometimes if I'm doing that, and I think of it as almost like whack-a-mole for pain.
Yeah.
But let's say that it's in my mid back, right? And I pay 20 or 30 seconds of dedicated time to that. And sometimes when I explain it to people, what I say is I'm closing my eyes and like staring down a threat, basically. And to me, like I remember being a little kid and like walking by a house that had a fence with like a really dangerous looking dog, because I didn't grow up with dogs, you know, a Rottweiler, some animal that looks like it doesn't like me, and it's barking, barking, barking. If I walk away or try and ignore it or avoid it or whatever, like I still feel threatened. It can still smell that fear, right? But if I just look at that dog and show that I'm okay with it and really have no judgment around it, then that dog retreats. Like he doesn't care, because he only wants the threat. And that's what I think of with this kind of stuff. So I'm sitting there and I'm imagining my back, and then almost inevitably it will move to my trap, right? And so I kind of have this, and then I'll pay attention to the trap, and then it might move to the in between the shoulder blades or something like that. So it does a lot of this moving. Sometimes when I do this stuff, I'm like, I'm fucking nuts. Like, why is it like, I feel like there's something under my skin. You know what I mean? So do you know the physiology behind that, and why one area is tense, you pay attention to it non-judgmentally, and then it moves? Like it literally will feel like there's a snake under your skin. And again, I feel crazy when I say that, but what is it, and why does it do that?
Yeah. So, gosh, I don't know if I can like necessarily explain the exact physiology of like, well, why does it, you know, go from your back to your shoulder and then over this to this other place? But what I can what I can say is, so to your point about the dog, right? Like staring down the dog. So if we remember that, if we remember that the stress response really involves like certain nervous system functions, like the physiological changes. Really what it is, I think, Eddie, is about the quality of attention that we're bringing to our body sensation. So think of it this way. Again, if a bear were to come in the room, would I be like trying to feel my low back? Like, no, I'd be like mobilizing, like get me out of here, right? It's like, I don't care like what I'm experiencing in my low back right now. Like, I just got to get out of here. So that's kind of a helpful frame to be like, okay, so you're sending actually nervous system a signal that everything's okay, because I can sit here and like chill and hang out with this sensation in my low back. Yeah, the jumping around thing is so interesting, and it's one of the things that like freaks my clients out the most. And so like, I'm really just appreciating your reaction, because I've had people like come back to me and email me and be like, are you doing witchcraft? Like, how did this thing, like this thing was like in my shoulder and now it's in my foot. And like, are you like manipulating energy? Like, what are you doing? And so when we start to bring a certain quality of attention, because there's a way in which, especially with TMS, to kind of bring it back to like pain and other symptoms, there's a way in which we can focus on pain with like this certain quality of attention that's going to jack our nervous system up. It's like, oh my God, this pain, oh my God, it's never going to go away. I'm not going to be able to work. You know, it's like, and then you're just going into stress response. But if you can, so the cool thing about somatic tracking is that it's really done with, like you were saying, that kind of attitude of non-judgment, kindness, presence. My sense of what is happening physiologically, and like, as I go through the training, I'll get back to you, because I'm sure. And I even asked this question at my last consult, and like the teacher just laughed and was like, you know, I was like, why does it move? And she's like, right. I know. It's so weird. And I was like, no, like, she's like, you'll learn it later. Please tell me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my sense, Eddie, is what's happening is that there's a way in which the nervous system is sort of being renegotiated and balanced, right? So it's like you said, whack-a-mole, or I think about like a jumping bean or something. It's like, it's almost like, to me, I think of it as an unwinding. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but, or like kind of the metaphor of like, I have like all this, like, what is it? Like the thing with the net, I can't remember if it was on your pod. Another TMS person was talking about like when you have like this bundle of necklaces and they've all gotten like intertwined and you're like trying to like, you know, just get this one separated from this one. And then you're just like, oh, fuck it. Like, this is too much. What we're doing is we're really, we're unwinding. And the other thing that I'll say too, is that what's really cool about somatic tracking, somatic experiencing, any of these kind of somatic things, is that we're really slowing things down. So typically, when we have like a stress response, it's like automatic, right? It's like all these things start happening. And then like a minute later, I'm like, holy crap, my heart is beating really fast. Like, how did that happen? So and they call it in somatic experiencing, they call it titration. So we are, they give the metaphor of like in chemistry, where you might put like one drop of this solution and one drop of this solution, and there might be like a little fizz, and then you wait to let the fizz go back down before you put your next drop in. Because if you just put all the drops in, you're going to get an explosion. So
you don't know what each solution did.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another quality of it. And so the nervous system, when we work with the nervous system, it's really essential to go slow. And it's that, like that saying that everybody hates, and I hate it too, is like, the slower you go, the faster you get there, or less is more, because the nervous system can only process so much input and information at one time. So when we really slow it down, we can actually see what's happening. So instead of just like, oh, I have tension in my neck, it's like, okay, I have tension in my neck. What happens right before I get that tension? Like, oh, I feel this thing in my elbow, and then it, right? So then it's like, okay, so let's focus on the elbow. What happens before the elbow thing happens? Oh, I get this feeling in my stomach, right? So you're kind of like, you're unwinding it. You're just like, you're pulling at these little threads, and you're almost like working backwards.
Do you think that that, because one thing that I think is interesting, and it's something that I battle with or struggle with sometimes, is I'm very body oriented as an athlete and as a weightlifter and as a CrossFitter, very in tune. And that's probably in a lot of ways, what probably set off a lot of the initial spasming and issues that I had in the beginning, because I was so body conscious. But I bet in a lot of ways that also kept me stuck for so long, you know, going from doctor to doctor, because I knew these really obscure muscles that were deep in the back or deep in the neck that nobody else would have even ever thought of. So I was talking to my old massage therapist not long ago, and I said, remember when I used to walk in here like 3 years ago and have this like body atlas of the, you know, like this map of the 287 muscles or whatever's in there? And I would say, yeah, like the bottom quadrant of the QL on the left side. This is what I think is the root of all my problems. But I was dead serious back then, right? That's what was going on. Is there any kind, you know, after kind of going through your own chronic issues and then, you know, more or less solving them or at least figuring them out and what the root solutions were, which is a lot of the somatic stuff, where's the intersection for you on somebody who's a yogi, who is very physically inclined, and then you come up against the stuff that is not so physically, you know what I mean? It's like,
yes,
you can't do much. Like, I think the thought is like you have a tight muscle, and I like when I listen to my like CrossFit coaches or whatever, people at the gym that will sit there with foam rollers and they'll stretch for an hour and a half every single day. I'll finish a workout and get the hell out of there, because I'm just like, I got the time for this and it ain't gonna do shit anyway. So how do you resolve that in your mind?
Yes. Oh, it's such a good question. I'm so glad that you asked me that, because I've been pondering this myself. But so this is where I think what is essential with TMS, so anybody who's got chronic pain, chronic symptoms going on, it's essential to take what I refer to as a bottom-up and a top-down approach, right? So the bottom-up approach would be the body, right? So that's the somatic part, right? It's like the body and the lower brain function. So the lizard brain, like the part of the brain and nervous system that's responsible for all the stuff that's going on in the body. If you only take that piece, because what's so interesting about like what happened to me is like I was a yoga teacher, I had theory, I had all this background on like the stress physiology and like the trauma piece. And yet I had no idea why this was happening to me. It's because I didn't have the top down part, which is like the logic and the framing, to be like, to put all of that in context and be like, this is what's happening. So that's why, like if we go way back to Dr. Sarno, how he said like, yeah, we have to work on our emotions. So that's a very bottom up approach, right? Working with emotions, like the lower functions of the brain and the body. And then he had like people sit in a lecture and he was like talking to their prefrontal cortex, basically. So we have to engage both. And so I that's my sense, because I do hear a lot of TMS like educators, people saying like, well, you just have to not focus on your body. And it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe that works for some people, but my approach with this work is like, no, we do have to focus on the body, but we have to change the quality of attention that we're giving it.
For me, in a lot of ways, like it's interesting because I feel like there's two camps of success stories I'll read from Sarno. The people that not necessarily read the book and got better, but didn't do Steve Ozanich, very famous, hasn't done an ounce of journaling, and Dan Buglio, who also is really well known, did journaling for 10 years and never got better. In fact, it probably made him worse. And so but they had two really distinctive ways of getting to the same place. And so having this idea of emotions, and people will kind of pound that into the ground for a long time. But there's plenty of people out there. There's tons of stories. You could just go to Amazon reviews and just see these people that read this book and over the course of a month or 2 months or whatever, without necessarily doing anything outward, were able to completely shift and something happened. Like, something changed because they're not in pain anymore and they're writing this review. Right. And so that's a lot of the kind of the stuff that I think about is what is really the necessity? Is there a necessity? But I think that the somatic stuff can be so powerful because, again, to me, TMS is fully rooted in fear, especially in my life when it happened because I had shoulder surgery. I went through shoulder rehab for 6 months after surgery. And I was just, every movement I did, I said, Eddie, like, don't hurt yourself. If you do that, you're going to get hurt. And then what happened? Like, I got hurt with my quotation mark fingers. But I had a terrible back spasm and I just assumed that it was because of something that I did that I should not have been doing. So there's the fear right there. And then that fear just kind of locks itself up. And by going counter to those and getting more physical and staring into the eye of the dragon, so to speak, to me, it's telling my brain, both the logical side and maybe more importantly, the primitive part of the brain, that this is not actually a threat, because I couldn't stand here and do these things if there was a real threat.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Eddie, I just had a thought and I don't know, we have enough time for this, but one way that could be helpful for listeners to kind of understand what you mean by somatic tracking is if we just did a little somatic tracking session right now for a couple minutes.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. We've got like five to seven more minutes. Okay. Let's do something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll watch the time. I have the time on my thing too. Why don't we just maybe go for like 3 minutes and I'll tell you when 3 minutes is up. So what I'm going to do is basically what you're going to do right now is you're lending me your nervous system. And I'm going to kind of lead you a little bit through and just kind of ask you some questions and we'll just kind of see what happens. Does that sound good?
Is it supposed to be eyes closed, eyes open? Does it matter?
It's up to you. I mean, for me, it's like way easier to close my eyes just because I can tune into my body better that way. But if you can leave them open if you want to.
Okay. Let's roll.
Cool. Okay. So, can you just take a couple breaths here and just really drop down into your body in whatever way is helpful for you. And then once you feel like your attention is in your body, drop down to your body. Just do like a little exploring, a little scan, and see if you can find a sensation in your body.
Okay.
Whenever you find it, let me know.
Okay.
Yeah. So what are you noticing?
There's like a flickering in my gut, in my stomach.
Mm-hmm. So flickering, kind of like a light or?
No, it's kind of like a, like literally if somebody was just sitting there and just flicking me in the stomach.
Oh.
Yeah. A little bit of fluttering. Nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does it feel like the flicking is happening like from the inside out or the outside in?
The inside out.
Inside out. Okay. And would it be okay to, does it feel tolerable to kind of stay with that sensation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's just have you spend a little bit more time there just watching it. And so as you allow your attention to just be with that sensation of that flickering or that fluttering, what else are you noticing about it?
Feels like it's getting softer and that it's spreading.
Hmm. Yeah. So when you say spreading, can you say more about that? Like, where is it spreading to?
It might have been when we started, like maybe like a centimeter by a centimeter, like imagine like a marble. And now it kind of feels more like the width of, say, like a baseball, but it's a lot softer. It's not as concentrated.
Got it. So would you say that it's spreading, because you use two images of like something that's kind of like a sphere. So is it spreading in sort of a spherical pattern?
No, I'd say more rectangle. I just said that because I couldn't think of something that was a rectangle that would have been a good description.
Got it. Okay. So kind of spreading out in like sort of a rectangular shape.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd mentioned that it's softer. Did you mention that? So makes me think that maybe it was sort of harder or more solid before.
More solid, but more intense, like almost like a pinch kind of a feeling. And now it just kind of feels like a light tap.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So again, would it be okay to just spend a little bit more attention, a little bit more, a couple more moments mm-hmm. with that sensation as it is now?
Mm-hmm.
So what's it doing now?
Feels like it's small again, not intense, and it's like traveling to the right.
To the right side of your
stomach, like not my right, not the person looking at me is right, but
sure.
I don't know, it might be 6 to 8 inches further to the right, like getting closer to my side.
Okay. Is it, what kind of, what's the pace like of the movement? Is it fast? Is it slow?
It's slow.
Nice. So Eddie, I'm just going to close out the session. So if there's, before you open your eyes, if there's any way in which it feels like, instead of just sort of like abandoning this sensation, like just like moving on, if maybe there's a way in which you want to send that sensation a message like, hey, I'll come back for you, or like, you know, I'm here for you, or, you know, I'll spend some more time with you later. Sometimes that can be a nice way to close out somatic tracking session. You're just sending your body that message that you value it, and you're grateful, you know, for that it's showing you these sensations.
Sensation, I will be back later.
Nice.
That was cool. That was
yeah.
How, you said that was about 3 minutes?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Or it might've been a little bit more. I'm not sure. I tend to lose time when I'm doing this with people.
Yeah. So it was kind of like a marble. And then like, you know, when you can like pinch your skin when you have like some nails, like you have like nails, when those are a little bit longer. So that really like intense pinch, it's kind of how it felt right away. And then, started softening as if it was just somebody with like a fingertip or a couple of fingertips just, and then it was like kind of moving a little bit again, like as if there's like something under the skin, which seems really strange to see. And one thing that I'd be curious about, if you have experience on talking to somebody or working with somebody, is that a lot of times, like, it seems when people kind of get into this fork in the road where they're like, either I believe in this stuff or I don't believe in this stuff. And sometimes that it seems like a crapshoot on who's going to pick which, like 50-50. But sometimes people will say, I don't have full belief because my pain moves around. Then there's other people who will say, I don't have full belief because the pain stays in the exact same spot. So do you notice when you've worked with somebody or a story of somebody who they've had it in the exact same spot, say it's in their shoulder, say they've had a terrible rotator cuff pain for 10 years, and then they start doing this and they pay that curious attention to it. Do you notice movement? Does it matter if it was locked in the same spot for a long time?
Yeah. I mean, I have yet to come across anyone that where it doesn't move. But what I will say is that I have worked with people that just can't tolerate somatic tracking. It's like, it's just too much for them to connect to a sensation in their body. And when that happens, I respect that, because what that tells me is that there needs to be more capacity built in that person's system to be able to even, track, if that makes sense.
Do you think that it's like, do they think it's dumb and that's why, or is there another reason that you can think of?
Yeah. I mean, it could be sort of like consciously, that it's like, oh, this is stupid. Or like, I've had people, I have this one client where like, because a lot of what I'm doing with people is like, I'm trying to bring them back into their body. So they like go off in a story and I'm like, oh yeah, so what do you notice in your body as you're telling me that story? And I have one person who's just like, oh, I don't even need to tell you what's happening in my body because I'm always in my body. I know exactly what's happening in my body all the time. And I'm like, that is very curious. Like, right. And I believe that that person believes that. So that's kind of where I think defenses start to come in. Like, yeah. I know Sarno talked a lot about our defenses. So, so it could be that, or it could be like some people are aware and acknowledge, like, it is too scary to be in my body. Like, I don't want to feel it. I don't know if that answers the question, but I've never worked with someone where they're actually tracking where it hasn't like
moved,
changed, or done something different. Or sometimes even it's a realization that like, oh, wait a minute, I thought the pain was in my low back, but now I'm realizing it's actually like in my leg, right? It's like, so there could be that type of thing happening too, where there's just like these new realizations about the sensation that are going on.
There's it's going to be out, I think, at the end of the month. Have you heard of or seen a trailer for a movie that's coming out? It's not about Dr. Schubiner, but it's about this whole idea. And it's called This Might Hurt. Does that sound familiar to you at all?
I've heard, talkings about it.
So I interviewed the filmmakers and then I interviewed Dr. Schubiner. And there was a guy, a kid, I don't know, he might be maybe 19 years old, 20, 21, something like that. So he wasn't, he wasn't old by any stretch of the imagination. But a lot of his pick, because I saw an advanced screening of it, and I won't give away. Actually, the advanced screening gave away what happened to everybody except this one guy, and it was probably because he was the most like captivating of all the subjects that were in it. But best friend of his passed away. That's when his pain started, and there's this really intense scene where he's working with Dr. Schubiner, and Schubiner would ask him. He was doing the short term psychodynamic therapy, and but he would also ask body based questions as he was doing this. Where do you feel the pain now? And then there'd be a few more questions, and where do you feel? And it would be like his back. And then there's one moment where he says it's in his leg, and it's so like riveting because you see this like single tear come down his face, and he's just like it. You would think that there's a python or a boa constrictor around his leg because of how excruciating it gets there as he's sort of processing this. And my thought is like when the whole thing comes out, because I saw all but the last 17 minutes of it, like that was the tease of when they sent it to me. But it says basically when the whole thing comes out, you'll find out what happened to this kid. And I feel like there can't be any way for this to end other than he's okay now. Because then it's like, how are you going to end the movie with it being so great and all these subjects getting better? And then this one guy who everybody obviously cares the most about is somehow still in pain. So I think that's probably how it's going to end. But it's pretty wild because he's having a particular experience like that. And this is going down a rabbit hole that we don't have to go down. But I've had like friends of mine in the past that are massage therapists that talk about doing body work and saying that people have an obvious emotional release during doing body work. And I never had anything like that occur. But I can see certainly why it would.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Christy Keegan, thank you so much for joining us. So tell people, like, do people work with you? Do you work with people? Where can they find you? I gave the website earlier on it, but give it to us again and tell us how people could maybe learn more about you or hear more from you in the future.
Yeah. So, I'm taking private clients for, TRE, which is trauma releasing exercises. I'm actually weaving in somatic tracking with TRE, which is a really awesome combo. I am also launching kind of a pain coaching, from a somatic perspective for TMS, anyone who's experiencing chronic pain and chronic symptoms. So working from that kind of the bottom up, top down approach of like some education and like, hey, let's talk to your rational mind. And like, then let's work with like kind of the irrational, automatic like body part. And I'm finding that putting the two of those together, which most like TMS programs and things do that. So it's like a really cool, combination. So the name of my business is Mind Bod Emotion. So it's MindBodeEmotion. So it's a little play on words. So people can find me there. My email, if you want to email me, is just mindbodymotion@gmail.com. So love to hear from folks. Or I'm a total nervous system nerd. So anyone who has questions about anything that we talked about today, I'd love to hear from folks and go deeper.
And you do this remotely. It's not just local to Madison, right?
Yep. Remote. Yep. So I do like over Skype or whatever video chat. And if people are local in Madison or kind of in the Midwest, Chicago's not too far. Milwaukee's not too far. Can do things in person, but I find that it works pretty well over Skype which we just did. Right. So, works pretty well.
Yeah. And that sensation moved. So, so we know that works remotely.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It moved. It happened.
Christy, thank you so much. And maybe we do a part two of this sometime down the road in the next few months.
I would love that.
Cool.
Thank you so much, Eddie. It's been great.